Hello and welcome to recording number 10 of Gary Gygax's Artifact of Evil, an annotated reading. Today is August 5th, 2021. Just briefly, we're going to be beginning here on chapter 8. The ant has made its way through the Sus Forest and has found some ruins. They were looking for the lost city of Sulis, but so far they have found only these bas-reliefs that are in a language that none of them know. All right. So, I'm wondering if they may even be something like Olmen. But it is page 87, paragraph 1. A line hatred hung in the air. It seemed to permeate the great ghastly hall in layers of palpable evil. The closer one came to the throne of silver-set human bones, the stronger the hatred and attendant fear became. Perhaps it was the air, filled as it was with the noxious fumes of ordure and other substances even more disgusting, which smoked in fetid lumps on the hot coals of the demon-figured bronze braziers fanned before the black dais. In the stark city of if the stark city of Daraka was ugly and wicked, its palace was the nadir of such malefiance, and the reeking throne chamber its very pit, so torturous its shapes, so horrific its decoration, so disgusting its every aspect, that few humans could remain sane within its confines. Men and women, too, were indeed therein, but of their sanity, they who could speak? These dozen figures stood unmoving, heads slightly bent in deference. Amid the waves of foul stench and washes of hatred, they awaited the word of their master, the occupant of the throne, the ruler of this place and all the lands around. Great Ea's Drake. All right, so here we have a big jump. Now, we were just talking about this, that in this chapter, we're starting out in the city of Daraka and in the throne room of Uz. Now, one of the things I really like here is how the atmosphere is described. You know, he's not just describing, he's describing physical things like the silver-set human bones, I believe it is the ebon dais, or let me see. But anyway, we get a little physical description, but we're really getting, Gygax is really evoking the senses here with sights and smells. In a sense, it brings to mind, to me, the video game Doom, that, you know, you reach this point of it where, you know, it's this normal place and it's slowly becoming corrupted. And as you go further and further, you actually cross over into hell. And here, this really reminds me of something of a combination of a throne room on Earth and yet like a little slice of mind-warping hell with it, too. We get, you know, various descriptions of the foulness that's being burnt on demon-figured bronze braziers fanned before the black dais instead of heaven. And that this place is so horrific that it can actually cause insanity. So, you know, you rather than just, you know, dig out your Call of Cthulhu dice and roll up your characters against their sanity, you know, chance, here you can actually see how Gygax is forming what you can use to describe if your characters, for some reason, are ever in Daraka or in such a place as this. Now, I wasn't a high-level gamer, but for those who are, I really can see that here, you know, you could see that here's a good description if you, you know, ever doing it like a paladin in hell or whether you're describing a scene that is maybe viewed through scrying. All right. So I'm going to restart. It's page 87 and the final paragraph. Well, the question hung in the thick air. The rasping wheeze that voiced it, a sound of bone on slate, rusted iron drawn over splintered wood, somehow seemed to go on as if the moment would continue into eternity until the query was answered. Tall, emaciated man raised his eyes to the figure seated on the skull-ridden throne. A wizened old man sat there, wrinkled, ancient figure, whose eyes glowed with insane fires. Those eyes locked upon those of the thin, tall mage, and the latter spoke quickly. We have no success, Lord of Eldritch Evil. Hastening on before he could be interrupted, and being careful to avoid his master's baleful stare, the mage added, even with our combined powers, Lord Uz, the opposition is too great. Break. Now, here, Uz is being called the Lord of Eldritch Evil. Now, one of the things you find with Gygax is that he loves titles. And anyone from the Boss Daily of Stoink to the King of Nyrond, to hear Uz is getting, various titles. And I just wonder with the idea that he is the Lord of Eldritch Evil. Now, we have the idea of elemental evil. But, here we also have various things about Eldritch Evil that has come out since. So you wonder if that comment about the Lord of Eldritch Evil has a greater connotation than just, adding to the various titles that Uz assumes. Now, we have here, I believe it's an Easley picture of Uz. He's looking mad there, got the fist out. But we get a picture of the throne. There's a comment, he's not old really, he's just hasn't aged well. It's not the years, it's the mileage. So here is Uz, and we got the demon, little demon statue holding the brazier and the throne made of bones there. And we see in the background another brazier that is obviously steaming away. cigars and brown liquor. And we do have a nice little, and the interior art is supposed to be by Jeff Easley. And it does look like an early Easley work. This is a, if you look in the book at Uz's face, that's not bad, that work there. I mean, around it, there's, of course, just like a charcoal drawing, but the face actually shows a nice amount of detail there. Now, again, we've got a good description of Uz in his form like this, and also of the unnamed wizard so far. All right. And we're told a little about about the story, and Uz's reactions to failure. I imagine, it's going to be severe. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 88, paragraph 2. Silence. Somehow the thin wheeze that sounded this word shook each of the group who stood before the grim throne. The mage who was speaking when the command came had his jaws slammed shut, and his form twitched as if shaken by a giant, invisible terrier. How dare you tell me you cannot succeed? The old figure trembled too, but with fury. The wattles and wrinkles turned from gray to livid purple with the emotion. You belittle the might of Uz when you fail, and that is a crime which I punish in a manner so as to make death longed for. With that, the horrible old man spat deliberately. The bead of spittle struck the quivering mage full in the forehead, and the thin magic user dropped as if struck by a hammer. Buzz will not bend his knee to anyone. Cursed be the hierarchs and their diabolical masters. Twice cursed be those red-gowned nigglings who call themselves the Scarlet Brotherhood. Thrice damned to everlasting and tormented sleep be their Dark One, the one to bind all evil together. Never. He paused in his tirade, looking from one to the other of the men and women before him, spellcasters all, whether magical or clerical. One who lay still was the least amongst their number. These were the dregs of humanity, corrupt, evil, pitiless, deceitful, utterly without morals or virtue, but powerful and capable. Each bowed lower as the gaze of the master touched him or her, but each held his or her own hate and hubris up as a shield against the foul assault of Uz's eyebite. The reaction pleased and amused the wizened ancient one into a fit of ghastly cackling. All right, so we're set that here's the mention. Now we know Uz's spittle is a powerful weapon, and then the others are, there is a spell I believe called eyebite, but here is Uz. Just his stare is an attack, which they're calling eyebite here. I find it interesting that the wizard is supposed to be the least of the members gathered together, and yet he is kind of the one pushed forward to address Uz, you know, which shows just how bad it is to be the, you know, the spokesman for this little group in front of Uz. Now, it is also interesting here, you know, we have the hierarchs and their diabolical masters. And then we have this business of Uz cursing the Dark One, which is Tharizdun, a dangerous tactic to take, I think. So, you know, here... there is not, Uz at least, it's either bravado or an actual lack of fear that Uz is expressing here. And he is one of the strongest individual figures in the Flaness. I don't know if he is a part deity here or just extremely powerful. All right. I'm going to continue. It is page 88. Before I do, I want to note that on page 89, there is a full picture of Uz on his throne, which we've talked about and which Chris has posted in the fiction channel here. All right. And so we get... there's a note to make sure everyone understands the bones are silver set. Rather than silvered themselves. So they would be enmeshed in a framework of silver. And here are two of the eyebite spells that are shown here. And Chris does the one from Unearth the Canna, page 60. So there are. Anybody wants to post, feel free to. I mean... you know, this is all about, if you don't want to do verbal commentary, it is perfectly all right to post in the text channel. And like was done before, if you can't make it, then just let us know what comments you'd like to ask. And, you know, one of us will read them for you. And you can listen in later on the archive and have an answer to what is going on.
Yeah, we really appreciate all the help and all the contributions.
Yeah, I mean, that really makes this a much more full and lively commentary. You know, it's no matter what you think you know, there's all this stuff that you you know, you don't really know. And I'll tell you, you know, I have learned a tremendous amount by going through these books. I've read this book 6 or 7 times, and I've learned a tremendous amount going through it and listening to, you know, all the participants here. All right, and, you know, the Unearthed Arcana eye bite seems, it has the sicken power, a gaze attack. So that seems pretty much what Gygax is talking about. And he does, you know, he really likes, he used in Saga of Old City quite a bit from Unearthed Arcana. And here, he's definitely taking a lot of stuff also from the Fiend Folio. So he did like to go through the newest books and kind of do a little example of them in these stories. All right, I'm at page 88 of the final paragraph. "You're right," he said after the insidious laughter finally left him. "Buzz is proud of such filth as you, for the Dukes of the Nine Hells would shudder at your powers, and the minds which command them. But I am Uz. I command and you obey. Now gather up that lump of dog shit before my throne, or I shall burn him as I do other offal. And he would make a pretty stench, I think. And then you will call upon your utmost and accomplish what is needed. I care not how. Do it. Sacrifice every virgin you can find. Call up those demons bound to you. Utilize any force necessary, but succeed. You have until tomorrow at this time. Do you understand?" "Yes, ancient lord," they intoned in chorus. "Tomorrow, then, great as your reward for success will be, worse still the exaction for failure. Depart." Break. All right, so the Hierarchs, their masters are the devils. And obviously, Uz, you know, he's more aligned with the demonic. So later on, you know, we're going to, you know, start talking further about that. But I really don't want to jump quite ahead. And I like revealing things that are, I've forgotten, or just generally are little mysteries that come out. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 90. And paragraph 5. Uz watched the 11 slowly back from the chamber, one of their number using the diomer of her staff to draw the comatose mage with them. When they were beyond the massive bronze sheathed valves that allowed entrance to the audience hall, the portal slammed shut at his wave, while several of the dretch served as lackeys scuttled hurriedly to avoid being crushed. One was too slow, and the massive doors decapitated it as they closed. Uz stayed still for a moment, enjoying the sight of the headless body of the demonling flopping about. Other dretches quickly removed it, though, slobbering up the gore as they did so. Uz chuckled, but this time in a bass tone that resonated through the stone chamber. His loudish servants hunched their gross bodies closer to the flags of the floor at this. In seconds, all were gone from view. The cruel mirth boomed forth again, and then Uz arose from his massive chair of bones, skulls, silver, and gems. He now stood well over 7 feet tall, and his features were unquestionably demonic. It was time for him to visit his seraglio. Uz had many concubines, human, semi-human, and demon spawn as well. Who could say which he enjoyed most, beautiful or horrifyingly malformed and ugly? Mammalian or reptilian? Uz was a cambion, after all, bastard son of a demon mated with a woman. In him the worst of demon and human had combined to form the Ancient One, the old, Uz, Lord of Evil. He was full of hatred and malign purpose, and several hours spent disporting himself in the seraglio only served to increase his tension. Perverse and sadistic pleasures had served no purpose in this regard. All right, break. So yes, you know, that is the typical kind of harem of a Turkish, a seraglio. But you know, that's added here for that. And then, you know, we get, of course, Uz's terrible character, the idea that he uses low-level dretch demons as his, you know, his immediate servants around him. We get a comment about the throne being, you know, skulls and bones and gems and silver. And about his ability to transform in an instant, where he's now gone... you know, that it's mentioned that his tension increased, even though he spent several hours being served in the seraglio. And that just shows that, you know, Uz is, and as it says, is it ugly or beautiful that attracts him more? He is mentioned as a cambion, half demon, and, you know, half demon, half human. And, he's very powerful. So, you know, that implies that his foreparents, you know, his parents there are powerful in themselves. And he is very, very angry at failure. I mean, genuinely angry. We get a number of his titles here. Ancient One, the Old, Uz, Lord of Evil. So we've got here a pretty good idea of, you know, what was, you know, how his attitude is and how he's described. And, you know, a very terrible, and in most campaigns, you really, you know, I mean, I guess it really depends on the DM. You may or may not be hobnobbing with all the named characters and going up against horrifying creatures such as Uz. I mean... there's no limit to what you can do in the campaign, and nobody really who can come and say, you know, you're doing this wrong. But this really is, you know, this is supposed to be a horrific, torturous, mind-bending place, and Uz is perhaps the most powerful evil character you're likely to come across on the earth, and without going to another plane. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 91 and the first paragraph. Uz silently cursed all, as was his habit. It seemed as if many great beings and powerful persons had conspired directly against him of late. The last century in actual time, but to Uz this was lately. While there was a certain sense of pride gained from this, a recognition of Uz's true merit, as it were, combination had harmed him nonetheless. First his mother, Yggdrasil, had turned against him, then disappeared. It was with her help that he had gained his realm, and she had promised to aid in its expansion. Well wrought her. Then Grazit's disease wrought his vitals, had been removed from his ken too. Grazit, Uz's dear father, Uz sneered at the thought, had actually done for his mother, thus done for a portion of his son's immediate ambitions. Well, what would come next was yet to be seen. And break. So it's commented, and yes, I had noted this too. Everything in the last 100 years is recent to Uz. So he is very old, and time is different for him. That's one of the commentaries. And yes, you know, that I caught hold of too, that Uz, how old is Uz? How long has he been around? I mean, he's called the Old One. You know, how long in Gygax's mind has there been Uz? Now, his mother, Yggdrasil, is the human, and she is immensely powerful. She's probably one of the most powerful magic user witches in existence, and she herself is unnaturally old. I believe. I have to jump to see. If Uz is old, then of course, since she bore him, that she is naturally very old himself.
There was a question as to whether or not we knew whether Ayus was the son of Grazit and Yggwilf outside of the book before it was revealed in the book.
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, the book is 87, so the sources we're looking at for us are very limited. We're really probably the only things that would mention him would be the folio from 80 and the 83 box set. And I think that they're very, very limited. I don't think he is one of the characters named in the first edition Dungeon Master's Guide. And so, you know, I don't believe we really knew of Yggwilf and Grazit. We can look that up later, and you know, if somebody knows, they can mention it now. It is mentioned that Yggwilf is known as Tasha. I've heard of that. And, you know, sure, it's possible. In my campaign, Yggwilf is also Baba Yaga, and this creature that the Black Morians and the people called the Sul Barbarians know as, Praja. And she could be Tasha as well, because, you know, there is this legendary thing about the witch being seen as three women, the maid, the mother, and the hag. So, you know, Yggwilf could take appearances. And, you know, we see here where Uz was using her help to build up his realm. Yeah, and so there's no mention in the of Yggwilf, Uz, or Grazit in the first edition DMG.
I didn't see it in the folio either.
Yeah, well, there is some mention of Uz because the lands.
Yeah, I'm sorry, of Grazit or Yggwilf.
Then, of course, there's mention of Uz in Temple. I think in Temple of Elemental Evil. There might be, because I think there's mention of Cuthbert, and Cuthbert and Uz are diametrically opposed.
Yeah.
They represent kind of like semi-deities that, you know, most of the deities are not on Earth. They're not in this plane. And so you call them up or summon them, but most of the time they're granting powers, but they're not actually like appearing upon the earth, as far as I remember, in you know, the set campaign. So here we have Uz as extraordinarily powerful, and Yggwilf, you know, old and powerful herself. And yeah, here's a little thing about the from TOE about Uz and Cuthbert. Uz is a demigod, and Saint Cuthbert is a lesser god. Both of them can appear upon the earth, which is, you know, much, much different. So we really don't get much more than that Uz and St. Cuthbert here are really directly opposed. And then we're given some information story-wise and campaign-wise. I don't know how much we can trust what is being said. You know, we are continually, and I probably remind everybody of this almost every recording, that Uz is an unreliable narrator. So what Uz is saying is true to him, but it's not necessarily objectively true, you know, or in an omniscient way that this is what's going on. And yes, there's more information about Uz and Cuthbert in the Temple of Elemental Evil. But again, I don't think there's mention. Of course, the main plot of revolves around Zugmoti, I don't think there's any mention of Yggwilf or Grazit being part of that. Now, we see here the relationship that Uz has with Grazit, his father, and also, you know, he is... you know, he has no real feelings for anyone but himself. Oh, and there's a novelization that came out in around 2001 that's called Temple of Elemental Evil. And in that, there is a relationship between Uz and Zugmoy. And I don't know, that may even be something mentioned within these books. I have a vague feeling that may be true, but I may be wrong. I am an unreliable narrator myself. All right. So I'm going to restart here. It is page 91, paragraph 3. As if that weren't enough, Uz himself had been tricked by an unmentionable being and imprisoned. He, Uz, it had taken many years to manage an escape because the one who confined him was so irrational that no normal reasoning could break the bonds. Break free he did, only to find the lickspittle servants of Hades and Tartarus lording it over a portion of his realm. Yes, these Demodan kissing little humans and their masses of ranked fireball fodder had proclaimed the eastern half of Uz, Hill's realm, as theirs. Break. So, yeah, Chris has put up the picture from Temple of Elemental Evil of Uz and Saint Cuthbert. And yeah, that really was, our first look not only of Uz and Cuthbert, but also the back of Temple of Elemental Evil had a whole list of various deities and whether they're lesser or greater and what they're were they associated with death or winter or spring or heroism? Whether they were related to Eridian or Sul or Flan. So it was a very handy little bit added on to the temple there. So in this paragraph that we've just gone through, the unmentionable being would be Zagig, and he irrational and no normal reasoning. So there, Uz is imprisoned for many years by Zagig, and he does manage to break free. I'm not sure if Gygax is using the part of his gaming history to tell how Uz broke free, which was a little story in itself. I don't know if he's going to relate that here, or it was Rob Kuntz's character, I believe, who broke the barriers and let Uz free. Or maybe I'm wrong. I might have forgotten the, but there were a number of imprisoned deities or entities that were freed.
Yeah, I think Rovalar was there. And that's why Ayuz hates him, or one of the reasons.
And then, what did we get here? We get the information that the hierarchs of the Horn Society have managed to, while Uz was imprisoned, take over the eastern portion of Uz's realm. So, when he's released, he finds that his realm has been weakened. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 91, and second paragraph from the bottom. Being weakened from the long imprisonment, and needing to regroup his followers and gather more, Uz had had to smile and show friendship. Yes, he loved it when the dreaded hierarchs made Molag, his Molag, summer capital of the realm, their seat of power. Of course, he was pleased that their so-called Horn Society was there to combat the stinking fools who serve good. After all, he had been detained elsewhere, hadn't he? Someone had to carry on the fight. When former allies swore fealty to the hierarchs, Uz had never reproached them. Never. That would have bespoken possible enmity, and Uz was on good terms with all those who served evil, wasn't he? Of course, he was anything but he needed to gain strength and time. Ah, Then his dear lady, Queen Zugmoy, came and joined with him. Together they would bring all earth under his rule, spread her pets over its surface, and jointly take their pleasure there, or on Zugmoy's plain in the abyss. After all, there would be time then for planning new conquests on other worlds and plains. But as with Yggdrasil and Grazit, and even himself, the demoness too was stripped from his ken, and foes pressed him from all sides. Uz knew which beings, and humans too, were responsible, and one day they would be called to account. Break. Okay, so there that answers that question. Gygax definitely saw that there was a relationship between Uz and Zugmoy. And so that Temple of Elemental Evil book in 2001 is actually, you know, using the material that developed here by Gygax. Now, we've had a picture of Zugmoy from TOE put up on the text channel. It kind of reminds me of a Doctor Who monster. I don't think it is quite horrific enough. But it is showing a kind of fungi-looking humanoid creature with looks like a old lady of the fungus, looks like pudgy old lady, not super fungi. Yeah, it's not too stirring a picture right here. And I always saw Zugmoy as either, you know, and again being in various shapes and forms. I think Yggdrasil can do it, Uz can do it, you know, easily, this business of appearing in different ways. And I'm sure Zugmoy did as well. Yeah, and later on, when they pictured her, she's much more dark and foreboding. So it's mentioned here, she has a plane of this is her worship. It's not mentioned here. Why she, you know, it says that she was stripped from his kin, and she's a demoness queen. She's a demon queen. But Uz knew which beings, and humans too, were responsible, and one day they would be called to account. So, you know, here he isn't saying she's trapped in the Temple of Elemental Evil, but, you know, that here instead she is, you know, mentioned as being stripped from his side. All right, it's page 92, paragraph 2, and I'm restarting here. Can anyone hear me?
I just heard you now.
Great.
You started reading on page 92.
All right. So I lost the whole 92 paragraph there. Oh, well. I'll read it again, and hopefully I have been noticing. Now, I'm using the laptop rather than the Chromebook, and so maybe there is a little bit of a problem with the laptop. I was hoping not. But. All right. Page 92, paragraph 2. Even stripped as he was of allies and friends, Uz was by no means without resources. Foremost among them, naturally, were his own mighty intellect and powers. Then he had his servants, numbering in the tens of thousands, humans, demi-humans, humanoids, and even a number of major demons. Although he distrusted most of the latter, for they either spied for grasp or merely sought to curry favor without promising any real assistance. The drow were of some help. Those dark elves had abandoned all service of the supposed element of evil that had been his and Queen Zuckmoy's ploy anyway. To imagine that anyone could swallow the concept still caused us to laugh with fiendish delight. What was more chaotic indeed than the ravening elements? At least a quarter of those knighted drow now served us, much to the dismay of their mighty demoness mistress. Although Uz did not wish to anger her, the time for such confrontation was later. He did need those dark elves. Bandits and humanoid dregs were fine, but real power was in his hands, and the hands of those exceptional humans and demi-humans who had dedicated themselves to his service. Break. All right, I hope the recording's going well. Okay, so this is actually a very important little bit of information here. We learn, of course, you know, this is, again, Uz's viewpoint, but it seems to be in the context that the whole elemental evil is just a fake. And, you know, that was always one of the purported things. Now, again, you don't necessarily have to use what Gygax says. And in this case, I really like elemental evil or eldritch evil more than I like Uz or Zuckmoy. So, you know, for my own campaign, I don't have it as a fake. But for this, Uz, now, it's not mentioned, but the demoness, of course, ruling the drow is Loth. And Uz does not want to confront her at this point. So this is filled with, you know, a lot of information and about how, you know, about a quarter of the drow have now moved from elemental evil, from Loth, to supposedly elemental evil, and now are worshipping Uz, or perhaps Uz and Zuckmoy. But they have lost their worship of Loth. So we're going to see quite a split if you use this in Greyhawk campaign. You're going to see quite a split in drow society. I think this may be the first time that drow are mentioned. Now, Evely, his old, flame from Stoink, and then the daughter of Count Blimu, she has an elven heritage, and part of that is violet eyes and platinum blonde hair. So in a sense, she pretty much, and those elves like her, pretty much, and I think they were gray elves, very much resemble the drow. So here we're talking about the drow and a split, a definite split in them. And it's hard to tell where some of the, like the Temple of Elemental Evil or the Battle of Emerity Meadows, where they stand in time in relation to what's current in this campaign. Alright, so...
I think they mentioned... I think they mentioned Drow and Greyhawk.
Oh, in Saga of Old City?
Yeah, earlier.
Okay. I can look it up too. Yeah, I wasn't sure. You know, it is good to pick up all this stuff, but there is a wealth of information. So, you know, it does get a little, it does drown out other things. All right, but, all right, still, you know, here we know now, Zuckmoy's missing. So she could be caught up in the Temple of Elemental Evil. Or maybe not, I don't know. But Zuckmoy is missing. And, but at this point, the drow followers of Elemental Evil are now worshiping us. So, you know, it's hard to tell when these various modules or historical events actually occur. And, you know, they can occur at different times in a campaign. And so in Gygax's campaign, while Uz is and the have been freed, Zuckmoy is now missing. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 92, the final paragraph. Uz knew full well that there were men and women of great talent and power. Their might was such that they could challenge the rulers of the lower planes. Such as these, as he could gather, he cherished in his own degrading way. Six of the greatest he had, and six just a little lesser, and six others beside that. Each of the first two groups knew of each other, but of the last six they knew nothing, just as each one in the latter group knew nothing of the others. As the first and second sixes worked and wrought as Uz willed, the others did his bidding as well, only without any knowledge save their masters. Somewhere in the wide Flaness were a human, a dwarf, an elf, a gnome, a halfling, and a half-elf, each supposing that he or she alone was a secret servant of the Lord of Ancient Evil. Now each had a special mission to fulfill. Uz took no chances. All right, break. So this is dealt with later in the Sargon era. But here we have, Uz's three groups of six, you know, very symbolic. And the last group themselves aren't a group. They're just six individuals who are serving Uz, not knowing of any other groups, any other secret organizations, just thinking that they're lone, hidden servants of Uz. And here's a comment about the drow, I believe, that Chris has posted. Yes. Yes, I remember this now. Back in Saga of Old City, toward the end of Gord's time in the city before he goes off with the Renee, he was robbing and known as Black Cat. And there was thought that he might be a drow, one of the dark elven folk. So the drow at this point of Gord, in Gord in his youth, not a real child anymore, but still very, very young, when he hadn't left the city of Greyhawk, the drow were at least, it seems like from the context, that the drow were generally known. So, you know, the drow were pretty much a secret at the beginning of the giant modules. So, I don't think they were supposed to be commonly known. So that could certainly put those adventures before in Gord's true youth, or even earlier. So, it is interesting to see, or simply that Gygax had the drow not as secret as they are when you run the G series. And I believe if you read through the folio in the box set, I'm not sure if there's commentary in them right now of the drow or not. All right. So, you know, we have a little more of Uz's character. It's not really surprising. I mean, he might have great intellect, but what he doesn't have is wisdom. He doesn't have maturity. He has great power, but he acts like a spoiled child. And he has no real loyalty. And he has some, you know, terrible characteristics of sadism and, you know, being petty and vindictive. So, you know, he is not, he's a good villain, but not anyone of, the only thing you are forced to respect him for is his raw power. And if he didn't have that, he would have nothing. So that is pretty much how, you know, I think Uz is being portrayed right here. Now we also get in this that the six individuals serving Uz in secret are a human, dwarf, elf, gnome, halfling, and a half-elf. You know, Uz is thinking in a way to spread these characters through various races, possibly to influence various societies, and maybe even have an ear on, because you don't know who they are and what they are within those societies. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 93, paragraph 1. Still in the tall, fat, demonic form, perhaps his true one, Uz passed through a secret panel and descended a worn flight of steps. The labyrinth beneath his palace was extensive, but few, if any, beside the ancient Cambion, knew its full extent. After a time he came to a natural grotto, a place worn by water from the limestone. It was one of his favorite places, for the shapes formed by the slowly dripping water had made grotesqueries. Uz had added his own touches, so that now the place resembled a nightmare world. He loved it. Calcified bodies writhed in stony agony. Things leered. Disgusting acts were committed to slowly evolving fruition by carefully channeled water. Here he and Zuckmoy had spent much time, and she had created a fungi garden unparalleled in nature. Its revolting colors, forms, and scents were even disquieting to Uz at times. Marvelous. Now, however, there were visitors occupying the secret garden, as it were. Break. Okay, the secret garden business is, you know, there's a book, a child classic called The Secret Garden, and I'm sure Gygax is kind of making that parallel, and of how evil this place is. Now, Gygax is a great reader, and I would suggest there is a story in Jack Vance's Dying Earth books about a magician in that strange place who had created a woman who saw all the earth as horrible. But instead of her seeing evil things as good, she simply saw all things as disgusting and evil. But there's some good description there, and I kind of get the idea that Gygax, seeing Uz and Zuckmoy, seeing all the things that normally would be disgusting as beautiful, is kind of in relation to that Vance story. And Gygax was, you know, based a lot of his ideas on the AD&D system from that Vance Dying Earth. And I highly recommend people reading it. It's great writing, and it's a lot of fun to read these things. It kind of even goes beyond, because Vance had a good touch at description, and the way they did magic there and that setting, it's truly wonderful.
It sounds a little Addams Family-ish, too.
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, that is not, you know, that is good is bad and bad is good is not, right. You know, a real, you know, it's not something that originates with Vance or anything. It is simply, you know, something that's been seen in that distorted perspective. We're getting near the end, but I'm going to keep going a little more. I don't think we're going to finish this chapter tonight, but I will go on. It is page 93, paragraph 2. "Welcome, Lord Uz," piped a voice from nearby. Three small drow stepped back, bowing. These were priests of Grazit's, inconsiderable nothings, as were the three magic users who rounded out the male contingent of the Dark Elves. There were also a pair of female clerics, and the female leader of the embassy. These two likewise bowed to Uz, informing him that their mistress was expecting him. There in a small, richly furnished alcove was Eclavdra, ambassador to the court, and leader of the Eelserve clan, and all those drow who followed it. "You look well, lord," the beautiful Eclavdra said sweetly in her lilting soprano voice, as she idly plucked another leg torn from a huge spider she had pinned to a table with a slender stiletto. "Your loving father sends you his greetings." "Leave off the mockery, Eclavdra, and cease that foolishness with the eight-legger. I have things of import to discuss." The beautiful dark elf laughed, and the cruelest laugh Uz had been treated to in too long a time. "No mockery, Lord of Evil. See," Eclavdra thrust her lovely ebon arm before the scissoring mandibles of the pain-racked Black Widow. Instantly the creature closed its jaws and pumped its venom, but instead of the expected result, the great spider suddenly released its hold, uttering a screeching chitter in terrible agony as it did so, and visibly disintegrated to a bubbling, soupy mass of foulness before Uz's surprised gaze. "Mighty Grazd, your father has bestowed a small favor upon me, Lord Uz," she explained as she hungrily enjoyed the last of the putrefaction on the table, "and has likewise given me advice to pass along to his son." Uz ground his sharp-pointed teeth at the studied insult, but he forced a smile and cocked one eyebrow in inquiry, although this made his countenance more ghastly and demoniacal than ever. Eclavdra seemed unaffected. "Mighty Grazd has recently triumphed, and now fully three layers of the abyss are at the prince's command. In celebration, Mighty Grazd has granted amnesty to your mother, Yggdrasil, provided she obeys. He will loose her to aid his son's cause here on earth." All right, break. So, you know, here we meet Eclavdra, a good description, as she is supposed to be ravishingly beautiful in, you know, her elven drow form, and also just about as evil as Uz or any other demonic being. Yes, and here it's commented that that the drow are attached to Grazd. So now, I had thought Eclavdra was a follower of Uz, but instead, she isn't. At this point, she isn't. She's following Grazd, and he is rewarding her with special physical abilities, as destroying the spider shows.
Yeah, it kind of shows that she has no affinity with Loth.
Yes, and also that she's the leader of a large clan shows that, there's a big section. Now, that even fragments drow society even more, because they have the Loth worshippers, the ones that went over to Elemental Evil and then to Uz, and now at least one of the, I believe there are 16 houses. One of the 16 houses has gone over to Grazd. So, and here we have priests. We have, and again, Gygax is using the D-Series information, the D1, D2, D3 modules, about the drow. And again, the men are generally magic users and weaker than the women. While the women, they tend to be fighters and clerics. And then, if we look back, we see that drow are known as thieves. And that is kind of news to me. But if you look back at Saga of Old City, and one of the points of going through these books is to pull up this information, and here is this one line that implies that the people in Greyhawk think of drow as thieves. So, I found that particularly interesting. So this has been This section has been, you know, a quite disgusting description. I kind of think that it's meant that Eclavdra actually ate the putrefaction of the spider. So she has become, you know, she is quite a disgusting creature herself. You know, this crosses between a lot of lore and a lot of storyline. And it really comes down to how much you're going to use the Greyhawk campaign. In a sense, we're not getting too many particular things like about size or shape, you know, in the lore. What we're getting here, though, is, you know, political information about, you know, what groups are worshiping what, and, you know, we have several, you know, different bits of information. And that Eclavdra is also the ambassador to the court. Oh, I'm sorry. There we lose Chris. And yes, it is now 7:01. All right. So I think we've covered everything pretty well here. I'm going to break here. It is page number 94. That was going to, I'm going to call up the Craig bot, and that is going to be it for the night. All right. And I, you know, I want to thank everybody for participating. And I know a lot of guys had to take off. Sam did, and I did miss TJ tonight. All right. Let me finish up this recording right here. And I'll just kick Craig out of the chat. Well, I must have done something wrong. Because he's not leaving. Wait a minute. Period down instead of a comma.